in Memphis.
Hi, everybody. My name is John Colton, and I'm an alcoholic. I saw the people from New York out in the parking lot, and they were getting ready to leave, and they said they were sorry they couldn't stay for my talk. And I said, well, it's okay. I need to get my resentment started early this morning. And some of you that know me know that that's true. The name of the song that we heard yesterday was "There Ought to Be a Hall of Fame for Mothers." And I just want you to know that any females that are here, I consider them to be mothers. Whether you are or not, you're the mothers of this world and in this earth. And I'm glad you're here. I think it's a pretty good place to be on Mother's Day. I have got to introduce you to a couple of people here before I say whatever comes out. And one thing I hope that doesn't distract you too much, this is a yellow pad. That is my security blanket. It's got stuff written on it that I sometimes read and sometimes I totally skip. And my other security blanket is this. And this is a covered up big book that travels around with me. And I've lost this thing and left it at meetings and everything else. And you know what? It always finds me. I've got some special people here. First one came with me, and she always gets embarrassed when I do these things, and her name is Barbara, and she's an Al-Anon. Stand up. Stand up. She always wants to be in the background. If she only knew how much she was in the foreground. I'm going to cry too, so don't worry about that. The other people here are my daughter, Colleen, and after I'd been in this program for about 3 years, she was having a little problem, and she came to me, and I said, well, there's this group that I'm in you might want to check out, and she started in this program about 18 years ago, and this is Colleen. And next to her is one of the finest men that I've met in a long time, and that's my son-in-law, Randy. And working a puzzle up here on the floor is Spencer, my grandson. Thank you all for letting me be here. I want to thank the trustees, and I want to thank particularly Milton. And I think if Milton knew me a little bit better, I probably wouldn't be here. But I've known him a while, but I don't let everybody know me too well, you know. I want to thank the speakers that have come before me. You need to know that I've learned a lot from you. It's helped me quite a bit. I hear people say, one of the things that I always say when I come to something like this is, if I can get just one thing at one of these conferences or weekend retreats or whatever you want to call it, I'll be in good shape. Well, I've gotten a lot more than one thing already, and I want to thank all of you for it. Fellowship is a wonderful thing, and if we don't have it here, there's something crazy going on. So, well, I'm going to try and do this as quickly as I can, part of it anyway. That song yesterday inspired me. If I can say, if I can ever be more humble than I am right now, I want to be, but I don't know that I could be. I very much felt like Walt did the other, being here. You know, and I told somebody outside, this is like preaching to the choir when you talk in front of a group like you folks. I wrote this yesterday. And it's, I got a title, I don't know, it's crazy, Men to Women to AA. You were the first to touch me and us. We still feel your tender touch and softness. Thanks for breathing on us and softly crooning to soothe our fear. You fed our hunger. You cleaned us. You powdered us. You oiled us. You loved us. When we were hurt, you healed us. When we cried, you held us. When we fell, you gently picked us up. When we faltered, you bolstered us. When we failed, you said it was okay. When we were frustrated, you pointed the way. When we just weren't good enough, you said we were. When we were sick, you were there. When we performed, you were there. When we did nasty, evil little boy things, you cautioned. When we struggled in school, you schooled. When we screamed at the top of our lungs and were angry and said hateful words, you soothed us and lovingly touched us. When our feelings were crushed, you nurtured us. When you saw our growth pains, you pained with us. When you saw us leave, you wept. When you saw us come back, you smiled. When we lost a loved one, you were there to lose with us. You, Mother, loved us. You, Mother, loved us unconditionally. Mothers, thank you unconditionally for that love, that understanding that only a mother can give. Thank you, God, for all of you women who are mothers, childless, or without, or with children. Thank you for your nurturing love. You still give and give and give. To us, you give unconditional love. The only place that I got and get unconditional love, since I don't have a mother anymore, is right here in AA. So mothers and AA are pretty much similar for me. Thanks for letting me capture you and share that, whatever it was. I got drunk when I was, first time when I was 3 or 4 years old. I like to say that because it's kind of a shocker type thing and gets everybody's attention. My mother was a good Baptist, and my father was a halfway kind of Roman Catholic. Can you imagine? Some basic stuff like that. So anyway, my mother, trying to do Christmas, fixed what we call eggnog, and her eggnog was supposed to be white, and it was brown because she put so much bourbon in it. And I got to drink that as a little child, and I liked it. I remembered it. I remembered it all my life. I remember it now. I remember the taste, the smell, and how it felt, how it made me feel. And it was wonderful. So I don't know if that was the start of all of that business or not, but it was part of it. I can remember my dad brought a pint of whiskey to my grandfather all the time and saw my dad drink a lot around and different ones. I don't know who was an alcoholic and who wasn't. I don't want to judge him. I just know I was around a lot of drinking. I didn't drink too much until I got out of high school. I went to college, and I I was running track, and I drank with some guys a fifth of whiskey the night before, and I got out and tried to run. It was up here at UT, by the way, my 1 year up there. I couldn't have made another year. It was wonderfully wild. And it got the year I left, after I left, and I wasn't a part of this, certainly, but the year after I left in Playboy, it got the party school of the year. And I told my dad, I said, I'll never get through college if I stay here. And I did leave. I had a little bit of sense. And but that I couldn't run in a race the next day, and I wondered why. That's how crazy I was in an alcoholic thought, you know, drinking whiskey the night before and trying to run the next day. I still thought I could do anything, you know. And we had a drink up there that we used to mix up to try to get the girls drunk so we could. And what happened with me generally was I would drink it and pass out before they did. That's the kind of luck I had. And the name of that drink was called Creepin' Jesus. I don't know why, but I really don't. I wanted to tell you about the best job I had during college. The best job I ever had was as a lifeguard, and if they would offer me that job today, I would take it. I'm not going to go into some of the obvious reasons, but I did learn when I was a lifeguard. I got to do it 3 summers, and I learned how to drink, and I didn't know about that too much, how to drink then. They would get free drinks and pass them around and stuff like that. And so it was a little bit of a start. I'm not going to tell you the horror stories of that, because that would take a lot of time. I went to law school, and I went at night. I didn't go. I think my father could have sent me. I got accepted up to UT, but I was thinking about my time up there again, and I said, you know, I better not try that a second time. So I stayed in Memphis, and I went to law school at night, and had a day job. And but I started rewarding myself for working all day and going to school at night. So after school, some of my buddies and I, we went down on Poplar Avenue, around Poplar and Dunlap, which is kind of a rough area now. But we went down there, and we would drink after school. And so I got that done. And I started off after law school as a, you know how little and short I am, as a little banty rooster. And, you know, when I drank, what was so wonderful about me drinking was that I could look like Walt. Immediately, I would, you know, get about a foot and a half on me, and a real, you know, real handsome like he is, and all that. And I just, I got that way, and it was wonderful. And I thought that all lawyers drank after they got through work every day, because all the lawyers I was around drank after work every day. And so I became one of them. I found out in later years that wasn't necessarily true. But I started drinking every night. I didn't drink during the day. I really did not do that. I was in a lot of trials, and I was a trial lawyer for 25 years, and I've been a judge almost 14 years in September. And if you'd told me 25 years ago that I was ever going to be a judge, I'd have laughed in your face. Because I was against all authority. I hated judges. I hated other lawyers. I hated policemen. Hated myself, you know. And people would pay me to do some of the stuff that I was fairly good at. And I did all right with it. I made a good living. I had a part-time job as a public defender, which was really good for me. It paid me insurance and some other things. And they sent me up to Chicago one time. And I got to tell you this little war story. There's a few more, but don't need to get into all those. But I was up there and just doing well and getting through this thing. And the last day we were there, some of my buddies were going to leave. We went over to a hotel, and they had a beer. And I hadn't had anything to drink for a while. I'd gotten to the point, I was in my late 30s, I was trying to cut back on my drinking. You know, didn't knew I was drinking too much, but didn't know about AA. So I hadn't drunk for a long time, and we got over there, and I sat down. I had what we called a fish bowl. I used to drink fish bowls before that, so I was familiar with fish bowls. And fish bowls, a lot of beer, and it's in a big round glass. And I had about three of those, and I was okay. And I said, "Well, I'm gonna go on back to the room." And all these guys left, and I was by myself, and I felt a little lonely, so I went down to eat, and I went to the piano bar, and I ordered a drink, and I think I ordered a drink for everybody there, and that's the last thing I remember for a while. And the next thing I remember was coming down some stairs and getting outside, and I'm not sure. Many other people do these kind of things. I don't really know who does these things. I never paid attention too much. Like being self-centered, you know, only cared about me. So I got outside, down these stairs somewhere or another, and I found out that I couldn't walk. And I had to hold on to that building. And if it hadn't been for that building, I'd have been laid out in the street. And that's the truth. I remember it very well. And in these days, this was back in the 70s, I had a real resentment against hippies, what I called hippies. And I saw four of them coming over at me, and I said, they're gonna kill me, cut me all up, and this is it. This is the end. And, you know, next thing I remember, I had another blackout. I remember waking up in my bed, couldn't get up, couldn't get out of the bed. I hadn't anything to drink, so long as the progression of the disease. I'd drunk a whole lot before then, but here's this one time and having these drinks and the progression after many, many months of not drinking, and it gotten me just like I'd never quit, and even maybe worse than if I quit. It took me a long time to get out of the bed, and I finally got out in... my credit card, which I was very proud of at that point, I didn't have it. I said, "Those hippies have got my credit card." And finally, I got all my clothes together and got on, and I felt in this pocket up here, and there was my credit card that they tucked away very nicely for me up there. These people had gotten me back. I was in a bad, bad, bad part of Chicago. I later found out, and... but by the grace of God, you know. Grace of God got me in here. Grace of God saved me then. Grace of God saved me a whole bunch of times. Well, that was a little Chicago thing. Between 35 and 40, I started feeling pretty rough. I gained a lot of weight. Puffy weight. You know, white, puffy looking. And I started to feel like I was just drinking a little bit too much more. But I went to work, was able to work, not very well, but I worked. I went to church and tried to pray about this. I didn't know how that was going to work. It didn't work. I was depressed. I felt sick all the time. I was angry all the time. Something got my attention, and I said, "I got to do something." So I didn't go to a doctor. I didn't ask anybody anything. You know, I always thought I could do all of these nice, wonderful things to take care of me, myself. And you understand maybe where you, some of you folks were in that point. Anyway, I quit smoking 3 packs a day. and I quit drinking right about the same time. Well, you know what it did? It just about killed me. It really did. I had what they call reverse peristalsis, and it's where you put something in your mouth to try to eat it, and you have a voluntary muscle here that pulls your food down. Well, my voluntary muscle started going the other way. I couldn't hold any food. I started getting hiccups. I couldn't sleep for about 2 or 3 weeks, and I thought I was going to die. They were treating me for ulcers and all that. Of course, I didn't tell them about my drinking, you know, and all that kind of stuff. Well, what happened, they knocked me out with, what is that stuff? I wrote it down. Oh, Thorazine. And that closed me down for 48 hours. I remember getting up trying to go to the bathroom, and I literally crawled to that bathroom to get to the, you know. And anyway, about this time, some interesting things started happening to me by the grace of God. And when I say by the grace of God, by God I mean by the grace of God. My wife left with a family member and went to California. And two children stayed with me. And I said, what in the world am I going to do? Well, I went to a group called Central Group, and it's also known as the Zoo Group in Memphis. And the reason it's known as the Zoo Group is because there are so many different animals in that place. Now, I'm not kidding. I'm not trying to be funny. I walked in there for a noon meeting, and I was the only one that had a suit on, and probably a third or a half the people in there had on street clothes that they had been in for quite some time. And there were seats in there that most of you would not have sat on. And I'm going to tell you this, and this is the honest to God truth. From the very moment that I took a step in there, I never hesitated. I felt at home. Now look, you think a big time lawyer like me with my clean, nice suit and everything would want to congregate with street people? Ain't no way. But I walked in that room and I was there. They welcomed me. Little old guy that died shortly after I was in there, he'd come over and put his dollar in, and it would take him, he would get at the end of the room, and he took little shuffle steps, and it would take him 5 minutes, maybe 10 minutes, to get to the basket that we kept on the desk there, and then he'd shuffle on back. And I looked at all these things on the wall, you know, and I liked them. I liked what they said. And I went to a noon meeting, a 5:30 meeting, and an 8 o'clock meeting. And I went to 3 meetings a day for a long time. And then when we got through at the 8 o'clock meeting, we'd go to Shoney's and we'd talk about AA until 11 o'clock, and that kept me sober. And I thought I was Mr. AA for first 6 months. I was really, you know, I was, you know, people were asking me to sponsor them after I was in there for 60 days, you know. I was ready. Well, guess what happened? I went on a trip. And I was hungry, and I was tired, and I was frustrated, and I was confused. And I was lost getting to this place. And I walked in, and somebody opened the door, and they said, what's your poison? And I said, gin and tonic. And this gin and tonic was already prepared. It came out of the air and came into my hand. And I got drunk. And I left this place. And God has to do a lot of things in my life to get my attention. Now, some of you folks don't need that. Some of you do. I'm one of these guys that has to really... God knows what gets my attention. He's a lot smarter than I am. I didn't know that for a long time. I left this place, and I had to go across town to get to back where I was. And I was out of town. I was in Miami. And I'm driving along, and all of a sudden there's a light behind me, the old blue light. I think it was blue. And I said, "Oh God, they're going to get me for DUI. And then I look over to the right, and there's a field over there, and there's another car coming, and it was another police car. And I said, "God, they take this stuff serious down here." And I looked up in front of me, and there was another car. And there were several cars that came in on me. And I, you talk about scared. Here I am. Look, remember what I'm doing for a living, okay? And the tables are turning. These people, they got a guy that they don't, I'm the guy that fights these guys all the time. Anyway, they got me out of the car, threw me up against there, and I said, "God, they treat these DWI folks rough down here. I don't mind, telling them. I'll be straight with them, all that." Anyway, come to find out, they started asking me questions. The car that I had looked exactly like a car that had just done an armed robbery. And I said, "Uh-oh." This is serious. And I probably said a lot more than that. But anyway, what happened, one of these policemen, they got all my wallet and all that out, and they were not being very nice to me. That's an understatement. And this one guy said, "I spent time in the Navy in Millington right above Memphis there. That was all it took for me, my lawyer jumped right in." I told him everything I knew about Millington and then some. And it ended up where they finally found out that I wasn't the guy, and I went on home. Well, let me tell you what happened. Let me tell you what God did for me then. I got into my room, and I couldn't sleep. And I looked the next morning, I tried to shave, and I looked at my face, I looked at myself after having these drinks. By the way, they didn't get me for DUI. I couldn't believe it. God didn't want me to be down there. He wanted me back in my central group. I got on the plane the next morning, got back in there as quick as I could, and I hadn't left since. My sobriety day is 1/1/82. That was New Year's Eve party thing I went to, and I got sober quick when those police got hold of me. And then the next day, I stayed in this thing, and I've been in here ever since. I wasn't real good at picking out early on sponsors. Some of you might be into this thing, not too many of you. I feel like I'm really, really preaching to the choir here, but early on, I was not good at picking out people. This one guy I thought would be good for me, he was another lawyer. He ended up shooting some guy, though, in our meeting. Yeah. So I said, "I better get somebody that doesn't have that kind of an anger problem. I got enough anger. I don't need anybody sponsor that's going to, give me that other anger." So The first year, those next 6 months were tough. I went through the divorce. that was a really hard thing. I'd been married for 20 years and had dated my wife for 3, so I'd been with her for 23 years. It's emotionally really hard for me. And I'm not going to ask for your pity at this time, because it was the best thing that happened to me or her, and it was eventually a good thing. You know how that is. It's not good at the time, you know. The other thing during that year that I could not have done had I not had you people, and had I not had a little inkling about this program, I had to put my youngest daughter out of the house. Not this one. Her sister. She was trying to get better. I was trying to get better, and this girl was trying to find herself, and she was doing some things that would have got us in trouble. And I asked her several times, and of course she was going through all that divorce thing too with us, and it was hard on her and hard on all of us. And finally, I told her one day, and I'm not going to use the words here. I said, get out of the house, get out of my house. And she did. And she went and lived with an older person, older lady who was, I don't know if they were doing the drug thing or not, but I'd go over there once a week, and I'd go out and to where she was, and I would stand on the porch. I wasn't going to go in the house. I was afraid of that. And I'd talk to her, and I'd tell her that I loved her. It's the hardest thing I ever did, putting that girl out. Second hardest was telling my wife when she called a year later and wanted to come back, telling her no, she couldn't come back. And that was hard stuff. That girl now is a lawyer in California. She'd flunked out of school and everything else, but she's doing well. Well, I worked the program and did the best I could with it. I thought I was doing the best I could with it, but I wasn't. And I've been in 20-some-odd years now, and after I'd been about 15 years, I thought I was Mr. AA again, and didn't need anybody's help, didn't need anybody's suggestion or advice. So I was doing very, very well, but I decided, unbeknownst to me, to commit the sins of sloth, to commit the sin of pride, and to commit the sin of greed. And as you all well know, on page 55 of my book, I think it is, 12 Steps, that's where those seven deadly sins are listed. And there were several other ones in there that aren't, that I broke all of the sins, all the seven deadly sins, but those are the ones I really want to mention, because you might as well get down right to it. So what I did was this. I was making plenty of money. My wife made plenty of money. Didn't have a lot of obligations. But greed took me into business, and I got into a business that I knew nothing about. I got people to run it who were supposed to run it, and I'm not really blaming them, I'm blaming me. I'm the one that did it. Ain't nobody else's fault. And that got me to a point where I am today. And I'd like to sit up here and tell you everything is just absolutely wonderful, but that would not be rigorously honest. I got a black cloud that kind of follows me around right now. But I'm keeping that black cloud from getting me by using you people and God in this program. And I've gotten to the point, and I'm not going to belabor this too much, but I may lose everything that I have. And when I started thinking about that about a year or a year and a half ago, and I got a lot, believe me, I've done well, got a lot, but may not have a lot. But guess what? What is a lot? What do we have to have? What do we need? What do we want? What arrogance I had. What arrogance I still have. I wish I could say I didn't, but I do. I wasn't even aware that I'd done any of this. That's how good a program I've been working. Anyway, after these people manage these things, I've got a manager now that's doing pretty good with it. And the bank is carrying me for a few more months. And I think really what happened is God was telling me again, have you had enough? Are you ready to do what you're supposed to do? So, yeah. Here's, I don't know if I listed on here what I did. Let's see. Well, I'll tell you what I did. First thing I did was go work 12 steps. And I'm one of these people that works the 12 steps. I don't think you work them once and then you're through. I got a couple of, one guy particularly that I sponsor that I'm trying to help him understand from my standpoint and from my program that you might need to work the fourth step again. And he said, well, I worked that 8 years ago. I said, well, has anything happened to you since 8 years? Well, no, not really. I've gotten married and gotten four stepchildren and got a new job and da-da-da-da. I said, oh, well, okay, that's not much, So, anyway, I think our founders and whoever helped them do all this gave us, everybody says, well, the fourth step and the tenth step are the same thing. I don't believe that. I think for me, anyway, that there's a reason for the different numbers and that they ought to be done in a different way. So what I'm doing now, too, is this. There's an older guy that doesn't take any stuff off of me. And oh, by the way, I've got Earl is my sponsor. He's a chairperson, and he sponsors me, and what a task that must be, He does a wonderful job. I got an old guy that's going to go through the steps again with me. I got to deal with these steps, folks. They're my basis. I heard a tape one time that I can't get out of my head. And it was about a guy who'd been in the program for 23 years, and he drank, and he finally got a sponsor, and his new sponsor said, well, what step were you working when you drank? Guy said, I wasn't working any step. I don't know what that means to you, but that helps me to know that I've got to stay on those steps. Of course, I try to work them on a daily basis on all my things. And John had a card back there that I picked up early this morning. It made me feel so good. It had the third step prayer and seventh step prayer that I use every day on there. And I said, wow, somebody else does this. But if I end up with nothing, as far as material things are concerned, I'm not going to tell you that it's not going to bother me, because it'll bother me like crazy, because I've been used to nice stuff. You know, I really have. I've been very fortunate. I've been used to really good things. And, but you know what? You know what I'll have if everything goes? I'll have God. I'll have you people, fellowship, and I'll have you to help me with the program that I need to live the rest of my life. And I'll have my family. What else do you need? Think about it. What else do you really need? I don't know. I went to, during this last year and a half, I've been going to all the meetings I could possibly find. They got tired of seeing me show up. You know, they said, boy, that what's that guy doing, you know? I come in and they say, he's here again. You know, they do that. I go to meetings that I don't like to go to. There's a meeting or there's one guy and he just dominates the meeting. And Earl knows who he is, and this guy's a great guy. He just dominates the meeting. And somebody asked me, why do you go to that meeting? I said, it tests my patience. And boy, let me tell you something. You talk about somebody, ask my sweet, wonderful wife if I'm not an impatient guy, because I am. Let me see what else I wrote down here. I hope y'all understand that, you know by now, that God is my higher power, and you people are the backup on that. And I would like to share a couple of more things with you. I'm getting close to getting through here. I'm going to tell you that I really appreciate all the ladies, particularly being here for Mother's Day. I think it's wonderful that you would do that. About a year ago, when I was trying to get rid of this business like crazy and running all over the place, I carried a couple of appraisals down to a fella in North Mississippi, and I was coming back on Highway 61, and my mind had what I call worms in it, or as I believe Bo said, the committee. The committee was going wild up there, and it was unsafe for me driving. I mean, it was that bad, and I was being kind of careful because I was not healthy in my head. And I'm sitting in this van that I'm driving out here, and there's this little old black truck that comes along. And I really don't like little old black trucks. I could get a resentment against little black trucks. Earl's got a little black truck. That's not the reason. This little black truck comes along, and the bottom of this little black truck has got something on it. It says, Heavenly Something Donuts. And I said, well, isn't that stupid? I don't know why I said that to myself. And then across the cab, this in white, it said, God is in control. And I said, oh my God. I said, thanks God, I'm back on. Get out of my head, I'm here, I'm with you. I pulled up to the light, and I rolled out in that window, and a lady looked over at me, and I waved to her. I said, thank you for your thing on the truck. And she said, I'm just trying to do my deal. And I said, well, you did it today. And God's in my life, whether I want him to be or not. I've done a lot of things to try to push God out of my life. It won't happen. It doesn't happen. That's how wonderful God is. let me tell you a couple little things that are God things for me. I had a guy that I used to represent as a lawyer, and I saw him the other night. But let me tell you how I saw him. I don't see him very often. He runs a big business in Memphis. And I decided, in going to all these meetings I've been going to, I said, I think I'll go down to the state line meeting, which is in South Haven. I hadn't been to that meeting in about 2 years. And I went down to that meeting, and I sat there. It was a pretty good meeting. And I looked over there, and I said, gosh, that's Mike. Well, I can't tell you his last name. Mike D. And Mike D was over there. Let me tell you the story about Mike D and me. I was his lawyer, but when I got in the program, I started talking to him about him drinking a fifth of whiskey every day, which he did for about 20 years. And I kept telling him, you know, maybe you ought to do something about that, and this group I'm on. He'd say, oh, I'm all right, I'm fine. And he was a really nice guy, and he still is a nice guy. Well, hadn't seen him probably 5 years, 6 years, 7 years, 8 years, I don't know. And all of a sudden, here's a guy that walks into this meeting, and I walk into this meeting, and he's right out of treatment. And we happen to be in that same meeting, and, you know, is there a God? Yeah, there's a God. That was the Mike Dill thing, and right back here today, this young man, I don't know how old he is. He's young to me. Everybody's young to me now, just about. I was sitting here talking to him a couple of days ago, and he said, where do you live? Or I asked him where he lived or something, and his parents live right across the street from where I just moved into a month ago. Is there a God? Don't tell me that there's not a God here, you know. Now, I'd like to do this. My mother, and maybe your mothers cannot nurture you now, but your mothers in God can nurture you through Alcoholics Anonymous. And I just want to ask you to pay attention. Pay attention. I didn't pay attention a lot of times. Pay attention when God's talking to you through other members of this group. Pay attention when God talks directly to you. Pay attention when God slams you, gives you a body slam on the ground and says, hey, buddy, change your life. Now, I would like to do this. I really do like women. And I like to hug women. And to get a chance to hug women, I was thinking yesterday when I was sitting down writing out that little thing. You could call it a poem, I guess. I don't know. I thought maybe tomorrow's Mother's Day. And these people have come to a AA meetings on a Mother's Day. They ought to be treated like mothers. So I've got, and my sweet wife went out and got it for me, a basket of flowers up here. And I want to give every lady here a flower. And you got to give me a hug, though, when I do that. And I want to tell you one other thing. I told you what I do now, what my job is now. And let me tell you about that job. You know what that job does for me? And there's lots of people that bow and scrape to me and all that kind of stuff. But you know what that job does for me? It makes me a garden variety alcoholic, just like every single one of you folks. That judge thing is not me. It's not who I am. It's what I do. It's what I do. It's a job. That's what it is. It's a job. And I might be able to do it a little bit better because I walk up those three steps every day and I don't do it by myself. I'm not doing that job by myself. I'm not doing it by myself. I say, thy will be done when I walk up those steps. Let me tell you, folks, I'm out there in some of those trials and I got four lawyers walking at me and they got their teeth clenched and they're gonna take that little old judge and eat him alive. You know what I do? I say, thy will be done to myself. And God gets the job done pretty well. I'm very vulnerable right now. I love everybody here. And that's the way it is. You know why I love you? Because I know you love me. And I know that you love me unconditionally. And I know you'll love me if I go out and get drunk again and come back. I know you will. Because I've seen you do that. So, thanks for letting me be here.